see if I got a level here.
This is Bob Gove again in Moortown, Vermont.
Great, and it is May 14th.
It's May 14th. Welcome to my world, won't you come on in? Miracles, I guess, still happen now and then. Step into my heart, leave your cares behind. Welcome to my world, built with you in mind. Knock and the door will open. Seek and you will find, ask and you'll be given the key to this world of mine. I'll be waiting here with my arms unfurled, waiting just for you. Welcome to my world. It's turn, I guess.
Okay.
I have a little story about Frank Hartshorn that I forgot when I was taping about him before. And Frank was, I believe, was telling Albert Neal about this. Someone, he told someone, but it wasn't me, about it. And he said, Frank went on, you know, he says, my wife don't want me to have any cream, he says, or milk, or any of those kind of things. She says dairy products are awful bad for me, and she won't put them on the table, you know, at all. So he said, but I fool her. He says, I go out to the barn, and I lay right down under that quiet cow, and I just squirt that milk right into my mouth, you know, just all I can hold of it. Warren White went up to, or rather, he didn't go up especially. He was working on a log truck with Mervyn Cutler, and they were up that way drawing logs, and they stopped in to see Frank. Of course, everybody always wanted to stop and talk with Frank, and he was out in the barn, you know, and Warren said that he had, of course, Clarence, his son, always went home and helped his father hay, which was a wonderful thing. Not many people do that, you know. Their families aren't that close. Clarence would always stop. He, even when he was road commissioner for the town of Warren, he would stop his work and go and help his father put in his hay. And I assume that it was probably cut late. Of course, Warren White and Mervyn Cutler would know something about hay, you know. But Frank was in the barn, and Warren said that it was very obvious that this hay was cut late in the season, see. And it was a kind of like June grass, because Frank was old and he hadn't taken care, plowed his farm probably lately. And he ran his hand into the haymow and pulled out a handful of that hay. And he held it up to the boys and he says, just smell that, boys. Isn't that beautiful smell? He said, oh, he says, that's just beautiful, that hay. Ooh. Eldon DeLong was an old Warrenite, of course, and he was about my age, but he and his brother used to go over and help Frank do different things. And he and Dennis, his brother, went over there one morning, and here was Frank out in the barnyard. It seems that he had several pigs, probably a whole litter of pigs that he'd been feeding down in the basement under the horse barn. People back in those days used to think all these barns, the older barns, were built with basements. And if you put your horse manure down that basement all winter or even for a month, and you don't have pigs on that manure, it just heats and really burns up, and it's not any good. So people always figured on having pigs on their horse manure in the basement. Well, it seems that the horse manure got built up, and there was windows along under just above the ground, you see, and that when that horse manure got built up to the right depth there, so it was even with those windows, those pigs just broke the windows, and out they went into the barn, into the barnyard. Well, you know, those windows were only, as I remember, any that I've ever seen, weren't more than a foot high, and not a very big, but probably 2 feet long. And when the DeLong boys went into the barnyard where Frank was, here he was, with his hair hanging down in his eyes, and the perspiration was just standing out on him all over, and he had on off his hat, and he was swinging his hat in his right hand, trying to drive that litter of pigs back through that window into the barn. And of course they would scoot right by that window. They didn't want to go by, and Frank was just beside himself with agony. Trying to get, and Eldon says, you can't ever drive those pigs back in there, Frank, and he didn't make too much. Oh, he says, the vile brutes, you know, I can't seem to do anything with them, boys. Would you just help me get those pigs back? And so the boys helped him get the pigs into a corner and caught them, and they took them in the barn, put them back in the basement, and he boarded up the window. And that was the end of the pig thing for that day.
Oh, and then you had that story about Lodger Fuller and Hattie.
Oh, yeah, I had another story about Elijah Fuller and Hattie that I had forgotten to tell. And it seems that a man from around town probably went there one day to trade horses with Elijah Fuller. And, of course, Elijah raised colts and all that sort of thing, and he had always had quite a few horses around, and he used to sell horses to people and trade when he could. And they had been out and looked at Elijah's horse, and the fellow saw a horse or a colt there that he really wanted, and Elijah probably was getting a better horse, probably a more mature horse, I imagine, than what he was letting the man have. So they were sitting at the kitchen table talking about it, and Elijah said to the man, I will give you $25 to boot between the horses if you want to do that, if you want to trade. And Hattie, Elijah's wife, spoke right up, and she says, why, Elijah Fuller, you know that you haven't got a single cent to your name today. How can you tell this man that you will give him $25 to boot between horses? And Elijah kind of snuffed up his nose a little. Well, he says, Hattie, I guess probably you don't know all that goes on around here. I got a little box out to the barn. And he says, I've been kind of putting away a little few cents out there along. And he says, I guess probably you don't know about that little box. And one day she was giving him a going over about something, and she kind of, after a while, she let up a little bit, and Elijah says to her, well, Hattie, have you finished speaking your piece? And she says, well, I don't know whether I have or not. And he says, well, if you finish speaking your piece, you better make a bell. Because people always make a bell after they finish speaking their piece.
She sounds like she was fairly domineering.
Well, I guess I like to keep telling stories about the Fullers because they were such a remarkable family. It seemed that they could do things that other people would never think of, even. And it seems that they bought this 4-year-old mare in Granville, and or traded, probably, I guess probably they bought her. And Lorne Fuller and his father, Ledger, took a horse and sleigh. This was in the wintertime, and they went to Granville to get that colt. And Lorne told me that the colt had never even had a halter on. And she was running in the basement to the barn, and Lorne went in there with some grain, and he got her, somehow got her to eating the grain, and he got a rope around her neck. Not a slip knot, because it would have choked her to death, of course, but he tied the knot so that it couldn't slip. And then it was a long rope, and he ran it through one of the beams, ran it around one of the beams, and then he took the grain away and snubbed his rope around that beam, and the mare found out that she was hitched, of course, and she put up quite a fight to get away. But she soon found out that she couldn't get away, and they let her fool around there for a little while, as long as she fought it. When she stopped fighting it, Lorne went and put a halter on that mare and took her behind the sleigh, and he and his father led her all the way to East Warren to the Fuller farm, behind the sleigh. Now, who in the world would ever thought that they could do a thing like that with a horse? But they left her there hitched with that rope until she had stopped fighting, and she made up her mind that she had got to give up to the rope, and she came right along with them. And Lorne said that they came up over Granville Hill when they came home, and they saw Joe Jewett standing outside of his house, and they stopped to talk with him, because Joe Jewett married a Downs girl from Warren, Gladys Downs, and of course they knew Gladys and her whole family, and so they stopped to talk with Joe, and that mare was standing behind the sleigh. And it seems that their dog, that Joe's dog, came out, and he was kind of sniffing around that mare, and he kept getting a little bit closer and a little bit closer and a little bit more inquisitive. And finally, Lauren said when that mare, when he got just where she wanted him, she nailed him. She kicked and nailed that dog. And he said, if you ever heard a dog scream, that dog did, and he went right to the woodshed and up on the jump, gave a jump up on into the on the floor, and stood and peeked around the door at them all the rest of the while they were there, and kind of yipped once in a while. Lauren said he found out that he could see just as well back a little ways.
Describe the barn a little bit.
I always think about the Fullers and their beautiful barn that they built in 1913. And I know that Floyd has told about his father laying the stone walls for the foundation of that barn. And, of course, Elijah Fuller was not a very big man. I don't think he would weigh more than 140 or 50 pounds. And still, here were all these great stones that were put into the foundation for that barn. Not cement, mind you, because nobody was using cement in those days. They were using stone for foundation. And Liger had his boys bring up stones, and some of those stones on a stone boat, and some of those stones were so large that they had to put two pairs of oxen on, one ahead of the other, to draw that stone up there. And they drew it in above the foundation, so that it would go downhill, and then Elijah had some hardwood planks, and he laid those planks down, and they used bars to bar that stone off. They didn't have the modern machinery that they have today. They had to use bars to bar those stone off the stone boat and down into that place where they wanted to use them. Of course, they couldn't use those great big ones after the foundation got up a ways, you see, because it wouldn't be downhill. They had to use smaller stones on top, but the big ones they used down in the bottom. And the boys helped him bar those stones off and bar them into place down there in that hole that they had dug out by hand, of course. They dug that this, what do I want to call it? It's kind of a ditch along where the stones were going, see, and they barred those off and placed them, and then the boys would go back and get some more stone. And it's just incredible. I don't know.
Yeah, Floyd told me that his father learned with his grandfather. I think or somebody told me that he and his Lijah and his father had built the other stone walls.
Yes, yes. Lijah's father came there and bought one of those farms, and I think it was the upper one that Amosy had.
Mm-hmm.
And Lijah's father was a stone mason, and he taught those fellows how to do things. And it's just, well, I've never seen anything else around the country just like it.
Oh, and the foundation
still? The old red barn that stands on the upper part of the Skip Blair farm, which borders the Fuller farm. The Fullers laid that wall for that barn down there, and they laid it in sort of a wing. The wing went out for a place to drive up in the barn with those stones. And I've been by there deer hunting, of course, hundreds of times, and I always walk to that barn and just look at that stonework and wish that I had some of those stones and wish that I had something like that on my farm.
Is that on my place? There?
The barn is not there. It's fallen down. Years ago, you could see that red barn from the road, from the Fuller Hill Road, but then the trees got up and you couldn't, and after a while it fell down. If I'm hunting in that part of the country, I always go back there and see that stone masonry. It's just out of this world. Mm. After all these years, that stands there just like it did when they laid it.
Yeah, I definitely want to get some photographs of the stone masonry around the big Fuller barn, because that, I guess, is still...
I don't know. I don't know how much of that you can see now, but I'm pretty sure you can see some.
On the left-hand side of the road, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
The guy has said that he's going to keep it for all time, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
You also told me about Frank Brooks and his children.
Hyle Ford was another of Warren's older people, and he ended up with two sons. He had other children. He and his wife had other children, but they died. He must have lost three or four children, but Lawrence was the older one, and he married Emma Ford, of course, which was the town treasurer for years and years and years, probably 40 years anyway. And before her, Lawrence was a town treasurer too. And Lyle, the younger fellow, was a wonderful baseball player. He just could play like you wouldn't believe. And he was a very nice man to talk to and all that, but he was not as ambitious as Lawrence was. And so when they sugared down on the Ford farm and hayed, Lawrence would take some of his mill help from the mill. That they finally sold that mill, they called it Warren Bobbin Company. They finally sold it to someone else, and in later years, I can't remember the man's name. I guess it doesn't come to me. But he ran that mill for several years after Lawrence, and Parker sold it to him. Well, anyway, Raymond Neal was telling me this story, and he said that he was about 16 years old, and he'd just gotten his license to drive. And his father, Arthur Neal, of course, ran a mill, a sawmill in Studson Hollow. And they had this old truck. And for some reason, Arthur wanted Raymond to go out to Montpelier with the truck and get some things. And so he invited his mother to go, and they started out. And, of course, back in those days, this was quite early in the spring, the frost was just coming out of the road. And all the way down Mad River, the frost was just coming out, and the truck was sinking in the mud, and there was these deep ruts. And it, when they got down just south of the Ford farm, here came Lyle and Hyle with some young cattle to turn out. And Hyle, the old man, had a rope on the bull. And when they got just right even with that bull, Raymond said he didn't actually know just what happened, whether the truck climbed out of that rut or whether the bull really jumped right in front of him. But anyway, he hit the bull. And not very hard, because he was going slow, and he said that bull gave an awful jump and pulled the rope out of Hyle's hand. And then, of course, he started after the heifers. And Hyle, being the kind of man he was, never even looked at Raymond, never said a word. He just took after the bull. And Raymond said, I felt pretty badly about it, but Hyle and Lyle got right a hold of the rope again. And Raymond said, I went along to Montpelier. And he said the next morning, my father said to me, now I want you to go down with the truck, Raymond, down to Hyle Ford's and borrow his corn planter. And Raymond said, I would have rather done most anything than to go near Hyle Ford that morning after what had happened. But he said, I knew my father was real serious, and so I jumped in the truck and down I went. And he said, I went in the barn and Hyle was still milking. He was milking by hand, and he had his head against the cow. And he said, I know that he saw me out of the corner of his eye, but he never acknowledged that I came in the barn at all. He just kept right on milking. And he said, I walked back and forth and looked at the cows, and he never paid any attention to me. And finally, I said, my father sent me down to see if you would loan us your corn planter this morning, Hyle. And Hyle never answered at all, never said a thing. And finally, he got the cow done, and he got up, and he gave his stool a throw over in the corner, and he said, he looked at Raymond then. He says, by God, Raymond, he says, there's a wheelbarrow in front of those cows in the feed floor. I want you to go in and take that wheelbarrow and go up and down that feed floor three times, and you go just as fast as you can go. And he says, if you can do that and not run into a cow or have any accident with it, he says, I'm going to loan you the goddamn corn planter. And so Raymond said, I went ahead and did it. He said just what he said, and he gave me the corn planter. But Hyle Ford was a very, well, I would call him a stubborn man, a very self-conscious man that never said too much unless he had really had something to say, you know. And you would think to go and see him and talk with him that maybe he was mad at you or something, but he might not be. You couldn't tell.
That's a great story.
It seems that Lyle was up the street one evening, and there was a girl that had gone up from down that way, and somehow or other they both decided to go home about the same time. And their end result was that the girl became pregnant, and Lyle or his folks, or the three of them, decided that he shouldn't own up to that. And finally, the people that the girl's parents decided to take it to court, and they did, and they won, of course. And Lyle had got to pay for the support of that child. And so I don't know whether they paid then or what, or whether he left before they paid, but he went to Florida. Lyle left his father on the farm and took right off and went to Florida, and he got a job down there and stayed down there quite a while. And I believe this was in the fall of 29. I believe it was 29 when we had that quite a hurricane here. All up and down the coast we had a hurricane, and it did a lot of damage in Florida, and there were some people killed. And Heil said to Lawrence, his older son, he said, Lawrence, I'm giving you so many dollars. I want you to go to Florida, and I want you to find that goddamn fool, and I want you to bring him home with you. And don't you come home till you bring him. And Lawrence went, and he brought Lyle Holt with him. Yeah.
And did he stay from then on?
Yeah. Stayed. Wow. He stayed with his father. His father died there, and then Lyle went along and operated the farm and so forth. And but his father was very put out with Lyle a lot of the time, and he used to say, I guess probably his mother called him Lily, and he said, Heil would say, Lily, Lily, Jesus H. Christ, what an enterprising young man.
And this is the same Ford, I'm thinking of Parker and Slayton.
There was a Parker in Ford. Harold Parker and Lawrence Ford teamed up and bought that mill, the bobbin mill. First, they owned the store in Warren Village together, and they ran that for a while, and then sold it out to someone, and they ran the bobbin mill in Warren together. Back in those days that I'm trying to tell about, people were very poor. Most of the farmers and most of the people were very poor, and they worked very hard. And I suppose that had an influence on their personality, because they were so stubborn and self-sufficient, you might say. And it is such a change from nowadays, and things are so much easier, and people don't have to work so hard for their money. And I just wonder whether the young folks are really interested in what went on to bring them about, to bring this their property about that they inherited. I think lots of them don't even realize what went on to make that property possible for them to inherit.
One of the things I asked Marion Wallace, and I'd like to ask you, is how it seems to me that Moortown, Waitsfield, Warren, East Warren are all very different towns, and how you'd characterize them.
Well, I don't know so much about the town of Moortown, because we only moved down here in 1973, I believe, from East Warren. And so I didn't get to know the older people in Warren.
In Moortown.
I wanted to change that date. It was 1963 that we moved to Moortown from East Warren. And you ask about could I describe the difference between the towns? I guess I'll start out with Warren, because back in the early days, I think that Warren was known as a sort of a rough town. It was a rougher town. There were, I can't explain why it was rougher, except that probably there were lots of mills in Warren, and I've never heard that there were a lot of mills in Waitsfield. Sawmills, grist mills, buttertub mills, and people came through in those years looking for work. And I know, of course, this would be after, this would be a little later, but when the paper company, the New England Paper Company or something, came to Granville Woods to log off those mountains. And they took a million feet of timber off those mountains 3 years running. Of course, a lot of their help that that came then to work in the woods were traveling men that went here and there, wherever they could find a better job. And I think you will find that that type of person is a rougher person. They live in lumber camps, that's what I'm trying to say. They lived in these lumber camps week after week, month after month, and many of them didn't have any families. They were just, you might call, loners. And I think that you will find that that type of person is a rougher person. They tend to drink more, and because they don't have a family or anything, they only have themselves to support. And they are a lonely people, and I think that they drink more. Anyway, you see, Granville Woods is right next to Warren, and those people would come into Warren to buy things and go to the dances and so forth. And so back in those...